The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
Okay, we don't have time for another report. We don't have another report ready. So I'll say, very short time we have left, I'll say a little bit about Lawrence's section of this book, Foundations of Ecology, His Treatment of Learning. And he takes a very different approach than the standard learning textbook that you will find in learning classes in the USA primarily, where we learn about basically habituation, classical conditioning, instrumental conditioning, and perhaps a little bit about mimicry and so forth. He has a much broader approach, and almost all his examples, if I could plug in, I could show you a little bit. Well, I'll post it so you can see my outline of his part three of his book. All his examples, most of them, are drawn from natural behavior. I mean, when he has to, he will learn use laboratory studies too, but that's the big difference from Lawrence's approach and the approach of the American laboratory psychologists that we call comparative psychologists. So he has, his first section is about learning without association, and then he's got learning with association, through association without feedback, reporting the success. And then he's got learning affected by the consequences, by the feedback. Then he has motor learning, which he separates from those things. Then he has exploratory behavior, curiosity. That's his last section. Well, learning without association, we talked about, it includes the facilitation and sensitization of responses. And then the second main category there is habituation, and he includes stimulus adaptation along with habituation there. I won't go through the examples now. I've listed a few of his examples here. And then learning through association without feedback. And he's got a long list of things. The thing we usually think of is the Pavlovian conditioning, where you get a conditional stimulus or conditioned stimulus. But he has a long series of things that certainly go beyond simple Pavlovian conditioning. He talks about habituation to the background or environmental stimuli. This is the usual kind of habituation that we know about. But then he talks about adding stimuli to the key stimuli. You know what key stimuli are that elicit fixed action patterns. But take the smiling response of a child. There are certain key stimuli that we know are needed to elicit that response, and you can get it from any baby. You know, if you just have the eyes and the nose and the little smile and do it, use a funny face, you can draw it and you can get it from them. It just has to have those key stimuli, and if you put them in a funny configuration, they won't elicit the smile. They have to be in a certain configuration. Okay, but then what happens? Over time, because other stimuli are constantly associated with the stimuli of the people they're seeing that are causing the smiling, it becomes more specific, and you gradually get more and more individual recognition. So by the time the child is, say, 7 months or so, 7 or 8 months, a strange person will elicit fear, and the familiar people will elicit the smile. So this is adding stimuli to the key stimuli. And this kind of evolution into individual recognition happens almost the same way in geese, which is the species that Lawrence studied the most. So a newborn goose, a newly hatched goose, will show the same kind of reaction, following reaction, with all different adult geese. And so if it very early, after its hatching, gets lost, it'll just go towards any goose and might be rejected. Usually it won't be attacked and hurt, but it'll be chased away. And then it'll start eliciting its distress call. But after a little while, just like humans, you know, these additional stimuli will be added to the key stimuli, and the little goose will now start to recognize its own parent. And they use the stimuli around the eyes and nose just like humans do. As you know, if you cover with a little mask human nose and eyes, it's very difficult to recognize them. It's the same for geese. They use the same area. Okay, and then he goes through the conditioning, the usual condition reflex that we're familiar with, but he narrows the definition, and I used this definition earlier where I said that a reflex is not subject to changes in internal readiness. So it's the way fixed action patterns are. It's always based on built-in mechanisms. But I'll just say one more thing that he adds here, and that is some reflexes can't be conditioned at all. Like he points out, the tendon reflexes, you just can't condition. Because if you don't have the mechanisms for forming these associations, it's part of the built-in structure of the reflex, then you're not going to be able to condition it. Then he has avoidance responses acquired through trauma. It's another type of stimulus conditioning. It's not, we've not moved to a different type of conditioning, but it's a very different situation. And it produces a pretty much irreversible change in behavior. An animal that's gone through trauma will avoid certain stimuli for extremely long periods of time. And of course, that's very adaptive. And then he goes through imprinting, which is another example of learning through association without feedback. He contrasts imprinting with the use of innate releasing mechanisms. I wish I had more time to go through all this, because there's very interesting differences between, for example, male and female mallards. Males can be conditioned to even mate with other species, but females, much more specific because of their inbuilt mechanisms in response to male, the stimuli provided by the male. And then he has conditioned inhibition. When we train domestic animals, circus animals, they have to learn to inhibit a lot of their built-in patterns. We don't want them attacking, doing a lot of things that could be dangerous for the humans. And here you have the problem of what he calls damming up of the action-specific potential. So a behavior cannot be expressed for a long period of time. It builds up and builds up and can eventually suddenly break out and get a violent response. And this can happen with captive animals. If you look at African hunting dogs, Hugo van Levick, the guy who worked with Jane Goodall for a long period of time, was actually her husband for a period of time, observed this in African hunting dogs, that if you have subordinate animals, they often, their aggressive behavior can be suppressed, they can be mistreated by a dominant animal, and they have to suppress all their aggressive behavior. But if this goes on for a very long time, their tendency to become aggressive will build up, and when it breaks out, you know, all hell breaks loose. And he points out that this happens with humans in cases of spousal murder. And here's the situation he describes. You have a female who is totally suppressed and mistreated by the man over a long period of time. She develops incredible resentment, but she's not as strong and so forth, and cannot express her. We all know, we've read stories, maybe you've even seen some of it, but women can be horribly mistreated. That's why we have these groups that support battered women and so forth. But what can happen is, with the damming up of the aggressive behavior, if she gets a chance, when it comes out, it can be exceedingly violent. And that's why she may just murder the man. And often they will get out in court. Judges tend to understand that if they've been mistreated for a very long time, it's almost like a reflex when it finally gets a chance to come out. So that's all in his section on learning through association without feedback. Okay? Now, if we get a chance, I'll probably have one more chance to do this. I'll go through the other types, but at least I will post the whole thing, the outline, so you can go through it, and then we can just discuss a few parts of it. Probably the most interesting part is that the classic story of conditioned salivation that Pavlov used, he goes through the analysis. It turns out it's not a conditioned response in the sort that Pavlov described at all. It was conditioned appetitive behavior. Conditioned appetence, he calls it. What he was really doing is conditioning, putting a stimulus that indicated that this was the situation, he can desire food. So he salivates because he's expecting food, not because of a simple association the way Pavlov described. It's not that what Pavlov described was wrong because you can form associations exactly like Pavlov predicted, but that isn't what was being conditioned by Pavlov, and he has a very interesting analysis of it. And that was known. It wasn't Lorenz who figured this out, but the publication of it was suppressed for many years. Why? Because Pavlov was popular. It's like John Garcia condition, you know, his poison bait effect was, he had a lot of difficulty getting that published because it didn't fit the standard view of Lorenz. Anyway, it's an interesting section of Lorenz. I'll post my outline and if we have a chance, we'll go through a little more in class. Okay.